Hare Krishna, dear Vaishnavis. Wonderful to see you at Govardhan. Damodar Priyaji tells me that you've been in Braj for a few days and that some of you are expressing a little bit of disappointment at what you're seeing. You don't feel that it matches what the FRO officer told you in Mathura. Please don't be disappointed and please don't come to any conclusions too quickly. The physical entrance into Braj is only the first step. I'd like to do a little exercise with you now to make this very clear. Please sit down, feel comfortable, close your eyes, and listen very carefully. I'm going to give you a description of a place. And once I've done that, I'm going to ask you all to tell me where you think you are. So please listen very carefully. Radhe Radhe, or Radhe Shyam, is written on most trees and walls. The air is filled with the loud sound of Hindi film music. Cars crowd the narrow streets, their horns blaring a lot of the time. There is no shortage of cyber cafes or ATM machines. Practically everyone owns a mobile. Business is the main source of income for the area. Nature is fast being removed by high-rise apartments. Summers are very hot and winters are very, very cold. Open sewerage systems give a very special fragrance to the air. Children or women with babies are always quick to approach you for money, and they don't ask, they harass. There's also a lot of people in orange on the street, begging. All sorts of monkeys are there to take advantage of you if you space out for a moment or two. And stray cows munch on plastic bags filled with vegetable peels and other leftovers. So where are you? I guess most of you would say that you're in Vrindavan. But is this true? The FRO officer in Mathura painted a very, very different picture. How is that? So let's take a look at what Prabhupada has to say about this. It's something very interesting. The Vrindavan that we are presently seeing and are feeling some disturbance with seeing. Let's see what Prabhupada has to say. The ugliness that you see is yoga maya. It's Krishna's covering. Vrindavan appears in this way to drive away the atheists and impersonalists, just as New York attracts them. Vrindavan hides herself from the materialists. So this is giving a little glimpse that perhaps the way we are seeing is not the best way to see. What he then says confirms this. There are two conceptions of presence, the physical conception and the vibrational conception. The physical conception is temporary, whereas the vibrational conception is eternal. Association with Krishna should be association by vibration, not physical presence. That is real association. So let's unpack this a little bit. These are not familiar terms that Prabhupada is using. But what we're meaning by vibrational conception is what we hear about Braj. And physical conception, we're meaning what we see, reality as we see it with these eyes. Now, there's a little problem with seeing Vrindavan with these eyes. Because these eyes are presently giving us a covered impression. Why? Because our intelligence, our mind and our senses are covered. So technically this is called drishtamon vision. We are seeing the jam almost like through a filter, a distorted filter. So how do we avoid this? We're presently at Govardhan, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Govardhan. Are you seeing Krishna playing with his friends and herding the cows? That's what he's doing. What are you seeing? Take a look. Okay. So I'd like to do a little experiment to really bring this home. The potency of vibration, learning to see through the ear as opposed to the limited vision that our eyes give us. So I want you to close your eyes, get yourself comfortable, take a few deep breaths, and then in your mind's eye, travel to your favorite place in Braj. Just stroll through that place. Note what you see there. How much does it remind you of Krishna? How much does it inspire you to learn more about Krishna and his pastimes? Just for a little time, do that. Your favorite place? What's inspiring to you about that place? Are you strongly remembering Krishna and his friends, his associates there? Now I'd like to try it through vibration. Just stay where you are, be relaxed. But this time, open your ears and your heart to what I'll read and experience the vibrational conception of Braj. The pure land of Vrindavan is cooled by the presence of trees whose tender branches are laden with clusters of new buds and the most attractive flowers. These trees are flowing with honey and saturated with heavenly fragrances, and their trunks are entwined with vines decorated with clusters of fresh, sweet-smelling flowers. The heart of Vrindavan resounds with the humming of swarming bees who have come to taste the nectar from those blossoming flowers, and with the cries of the doves, parrots, sarikas, and cuckoos. Everywhere the peacocks dance. Sri Krishna is surrounded by cows with long, slender tails. They approach him with an unsteady gait, for their udders are swollen with milk. Their large eyes become glued to the lotus face of the Lord, while half-chewed tender shoots of grass remain poised on the ends of their teeth. The newborn calves remain motionless, their beauty enhanced by the milk foam flowing from their small lips and teeth, with which they had so eagerly sucked at their mother's full udders. They cock their little ears to hear the deep, enchanting notes of Krishna's flute. The older calves, wearing colorful blankets and their little horns emerging from their soft heads, raise their tails, bud each other, playfully gallop this way and that, and finally gather around their lord. The massive bulls, laden with the burden of their huge humps, low deeply and approach him with a lazy walk. But when the liquid nectar from the flute enters their cocked ears, they flare their nostrils and tilt up their heads in ecstasy to hear Krishna's flute. So just have a think about it. You visited your favorite place, and I read something to you. Which gave you the deepest impression, not just of the place, but of the personality of Krishna, the personality of his associates, and the wonderful pastimes and emotions they share? I leave it for you to judge. So physically entering Vrindavan is only the beginning of the journey. The real journey is an internal one. And to make that journey, We have to learn to see through the ears. Now, a very interesting point about these two forms of conception that Prabhupada has shared with us is that the physical conception is not only temporary, but it binds you to the temporary. It will keep you here. If you form an attraction for what you see in Braj as we see it now, if you build a samskara in the heart, an impression of the heart of these places, it will bring you back to these places. The vibrational presence is a very different experience. The vibrational experience is given to us by self-realized mystics, Vaishnav mystics, who have access into the reality of Braj Dham. And what they're telling us is eternal. It's the reality. And by absorbing ourselves in that, it will take us to the eternal realm of Braj. So once again, I leave the choice to you, but I know what my choice is. Okay, so Prabhupada says another thing that's very interesting in this relationship. He says, Vrindavan is revealed in the heart of the sincere devotee. In reality, it's not on any map, nor is it part of any country. Isn't that interesting? You think it's part of a country? You think it's a place you can go to? The Prabhupada is saying no. Vrindavan is what is revealed in the heart of the sincere devotee. Here we're talking about the eternal, the reality of Braj. So such is the mystical and very magical nature of Braj. We tend to think that we are in control. Very, very illusory. We can leave this place with a conception of Braj that has nothing to do with the reality. It will be a reflection of our own consciousness that we will go home with, not a vision of Braj as it is. So we've talked about the internal journey. We're not meaning this in some esoteric New Age way. It's a very solid, scientific thing. And Prabhupada speaks about it in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm going to read exactly what he says, because it's quite incredible. But it's a journey that each of us, if we do want to take this internal journey into the heart of Braj, we need to take note of what Prabhupada's saying here. When a person receives the seed of devotional service, he should take care of it by becoming a gardener and sowing the seed in his heart. Remember, Prabhupada has just told us that Vrindavan will manifest in the heart. So nothing manifests without a cause. And the cause is usually a seed, whether it be a seed conception or the seed of a plant, but it's usually there's some seed there that it begins from. So that seed is in the heart. Presently it's in the heart of every devotee. Is it lying dormant or is it growing? Let's take some guidance from Prabhupada about this. If he waters the seed gradually by the process of Shravanam and Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, the seed will begin to sprout. As one waters a bhakti lata bij, the seed sprouts and the creeper grows to the point where it penetrates the walls of the universe and goes beyond the Viraj river, lying between the material world and the spiritual world. It attains Brahmaloka, the Brahman effulgence, and penetrating through that area, it reaches the spiritual sky and the spiritual planet, Golok Vrindavan. Being situated in one's heart and being watered by Shravan Kirtan, the bhakti creeper grows more and more. In this way, it attains the shelter of the desire tree of the lotus feet of Krishna, who is eternally situated in the planet known as Golok Vrindavan, in the topmost region of the spiritual sky. The creeper greatly expands in Golok Vrindavan planet, and there it produces the fruit of love for Krishna. Love for Krishna. Although remaining in the material world, the gardener regularly sprinkles the creeper with the water of hearing and chanting. It's a very mystical thing. This creeper is going beyond the material sky, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. It's bearing fruit. We're tasting that fruit, but physically we're here. No vaccinations, no jet lag. We're in one place. We're absorbed in Shravanam Kirtanam, and the creeper is going to so many wonderful places. We really do have to have faith in the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva principle to be able to make sense of this. So when the fruit of devotional service becomes ripe and falls down, the gardener tastes the fruit and thus takes advantage of the creeper and reaches the desired tree of the lotus feet of Krishna and Golok Vrindavan. So what we're talking about here is not that physically in this form we are reaching the lotus feet of Krishna, but through the mercy of Shravanam Kirtanam, especially through the mercy of the holy name, he himself, Nam himself, will take us in our spiritual form to the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is what Prabhupada is talking about here. There the devotee serves the lotus feet of the Lord. He's still in this form here in Sadaka, but he's also there in spiritual form. There the devotee serves the lotus feet of the Lord, which are compared to a wish-fulfilling tree. With great bliss, he tastes the fruit, not just the fruit, the juice of the fruit of love, and becomes eternally happy. It's quite an inconceivable idea, but actually, by joining this Krishna consciousness movement, by being absorbed in the practices that Prabhupada has given us, this is a journey we're treading. Better we do it consciously. Okay, so would you like to take a little bit more of a step into this internal realm? If so, please fasten your seat belts, open your ears and heart to the nectar that we're now going to share with you. Hare Krishna. With the arrival of the beautiful autumn season, the waters in the lakes and rivers became as clear as crystal and filled with fragrant lotus flowers. And breezes blew very pleasantly. At that time, Krishna entered the forest of Vrindavan with the cows and cowherd boys. Krishna was very pleased with the atmosphere of the forest, where flowers bloomed and bees and drones hummed very jubilantly. While the birds, trees and plants were all looking very happy, Krishna, tending the cows and accompanied by Sri Balaram and the cowherd boys, began to vibrate his transcendental flute. After hearing the vibration of the flute of Krishna, the gopis in Vrindavan remembered him and began to talk amongst themselves about how nicely Krishna was playing the flute. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that although the gopis were in their villages performing their household chores, because of their intense feelings of separation, they could see Krishna's pastimes through the transcendental eyes of their hearts, and they were relishing discussing them. And what kind of thing did they say?
Krishna moves about the forest in the company of his friends, who vividly chant the glories of his magnificent deeds. He thus appears just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exhibiting his inexhaustible glories. When the cows wander onto the mountainsides, and Krishna calls out to them with the sound of his flute, the trees and creepers in the forest respond by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with the weight, The filaments on their trunks and vines stand erect out of the ecstasy of love of God. Both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. Maddened by the divine honey-like aroma of the tulsi flowers on the garland that Krishna wears, swarms of bees sing loudly for him. And that most beautiful of all persons thankfully acknowledge and acclaims their song by taking his flute to his lips and playing it. The charming flute song then steals away the minds of the cranes, the swans, and other lake-dwelling birds. Indeed, they approach Krishna, close their eyes, and maintaining strict silence, worship him by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation.
Then the gopis said,
when Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. Oh girls, this son of Nanda, who gives joy to the distressed, bears steady lightning on his chest and has a smile like a jeweled necklace. Now please hear something wonderful. When he vibrates his flute, Raja's bulls, deer, and cows, standing in groups at a great distance, are all captivated by the sound, and they stop chewing the food in their mouths and cock their ears. Stunned, they appear as if asleep or like figures in a painting.
When the gopis were describing the sweet vibration of Krishna's flute, they also remembered their pastimes with him. Thus their minds became disturbed, and they were unable to describe completely the beautiful vibrations. While discussing the transcendental vibration, they also remembered how Krishna dressed, decorated with a peacock feather on his head, just like a dancing actor, and with blue flowers pushed over his ear. His garment glowed yellow gold, and he was garlanded with a Vaijayanti garland. Dressed in such an attractive way, Krishna filled up the holes of his flute with the nectar emanating from his lips. So they remembered him entering the forest of Vrindavan, which is always glorified by the footprints of Krishna and his companions. Krishna was very expert in playing the flute, and the gopis were captivated by the sound vibration, which was attractive not only to them, but to all living creatures who heard it. One of the gopis told her friends,
the highest perfection of the eyes is to see Krishna and Balaram entering the forest and playing their flutes, tending the cows with their friends.
Persons who are constantly engaged in the transcendental meditation of seeing Krishna internally and externally, by thinking of him playing the flute, entering the Vrindavan forest, and tending the cows with the cowherd boys, have already attained the perfection of samadhi. Samadhi, or trance, means absorption of all the activities of the senses in a particular object. And the gopis indicate that the pastimes of Krishna are the perfection of all meditation and samadhi. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that anyone who is always absorbed in the thought of Krishna is the topmost of all yogis. Another gopi expressed her opinion that Krishna and Balaram, while tending the cows, appeared just like actors going to play on a dramatic stage. Krishna was dressed in glowing garments of yellow, Balaram in blue, and they held new twigs of mango tree, peacock feathers, and bunches of flowers in their hands. Dressed with garlands of lotus flowers, they were sometimes singing very sweetly among their friends. One gopi told her friends,
"How is it that Krishna and Balaram are looking so beautiful?"
Another gopi said,
"My dear friends, we cannot even think of the bamboo flute. What sort of pious activities did it execute so that it is now enjoying the nectar of the lips of Krishna, which is actually the property of us gopis?"
Krishna sometimes kisses the gopis. Therefore, the transcendental nectar of his lips is available only to them. So the gopis asked,
"How is it possible that the flute, which is nothing but a bamboo rod, is always engaged in enjoying the nectar of Krishna's lips? This flute has created a problem for us, drowning us in an ocean of disgrace. What auspicious activities did the flute perform to become Krishna's wife? It did not do anything auspicious because it took birth as a non-moving creature, a low birth resulting from lack of piety. Yet that flute drinks the nectar of Damodar's lips. Can we tolerate that? No, because it is the gopi's right to taste the nectar of Krishna's lips. After all, Krishna was born as a gopa, and we were born as gopis. Therefore, we have the right to taste those lips, not the flute. Furthermore, the flute has the audacity to manifest as male and still enjoy Krishna. Moreover, this enjoyment is done without marriage, utterly alone, and by thievery. The flute then brazenly announces the fact to the real owners of that treasure of Krishna's lips, namely us, by blowing air. It is not just the ordinary sound of blowing air. It is the cries of bliss the flute experiences in association with Krishna. And we are forced to hear that sound. The flute is enjoying so much, and it leaves nothing left, not even a morsel. Though we are the rightful claimants of the nectar of Krishna's lips, that flute leaves nothing for us, not even his own remnants. Such is his audacity.
Then, as their hearts churned, the mood of the gopis changed, and they said,
"Because the flute is engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord, the mother and father of the flute must be happy."
The lakes and the rivers are considered to be the mothers of the trees, because the trees live simply by drinking water. So the waters of the lakes and rivers of Vrindavan were in a happy mood, full of blooming lotus flowers, because the waters were thinking, "How is it that our son, the bamboo rod, is enjoying the nectar of Krishna's lips? The bamboo trees standing by the banks of the rivers and the lakes were also happy to see their descendants so engaged in the service of the Lord. Just as persons who are advanced in transcendental knowledge take pleasure in seeing their descendants engaged in the service of the Lord." The trees were overwhelmed with joy and were incessantly yielding honey, which flowed from the beehives hanging on the branches. Another gopi spoke thus to her friends about Krishna.
"Dear friends, our Vrindavan is proclaiming the glories of this entire earth because this planet is glorified by the lotus footprints of the son of Devaki. Besides that, when Govinda plays his flutes, The peacocks immediately become mad, as if they had heard the rumbling of a new cloud. In Vrindavan, the peacocks ask Krishna, "Govinda, please make us dance." Thus, Krishna plays his flute, and they surround him in a circle and dance madly in time with the rhythm of his melody. And while standing in the midst of their dancing, Krishna also sings and dances. Then, those peacocks, who are fully satisfied with his flute recital, out of gratitude, offer for his pleasure their own divine feathers. In the usual manner of musicians, Krishna gladly accepts their offering and places a peacock feather upon his turban. Gentle animals, such as deer and doves, greatly relish Krishna's transcendental performance. And to get a good view, they flock to the peaks of the hills. Then, as they watch the breathtaking program, they become stunned in ecstasy.
Another gopi said,
"Oh, Sakis, we intensely desire to relish Krishna's dancing, singing, and flute playing, and to see all those beasts, deer, doves, and birds assembled on the hill slopes, who have become stunned in bliss."
Then another gopi said,
"Oh, Sakis, just see the deer. Although they are dumb animals, they have approached the son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna. Not only are they attracted by the dress of Krishna and Balaram, but as soon as they hear the playing of the flute, the deer, along with their husbands, offer respectful obeisances unto the Lord by looking at him with great affection."
The gopis were envious of the deer because the deer were able to offer their service to Krishna along with their husbands. The gopis thought themselves not so fortunate because whenever they wanted to go to Krishna, their husbands were not very happy. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how the gopis were feeling in their separation from Krishna. He does so very beautifully. The gopis were thinking as follows.
The female deer can approach Krishna along with their husbands because Krishna is the ultimate object of affection for the male deer. Krishna Sara means male deer, and also those who take Krishna alone as the object of worship. Because of their affection for Krishna, the bucks are encouraged by seeing their wives attracted to him and thus consider their household lives very fortunate. Indeed, they become joyful seeing how their wives are searching after Krishna, and following along, they urge their wives to run to the Lord. On the other hand, our husbands are jealous of Krishna, and because of their lack of devotion to him, they cannot even stand to smell his fragrance. Therefore, what is the use of our lives?
Another gopi said,
"My dear friend, Krishna is so nicely dressed that he appears to be the impetus to various kinds of ceremonies held by the women folk. Even the wives of the denizens of heaven become attracted after hearing the transcendental sound of his flute. Although they are traveling in the air in their airplanes, enjoying the company of their husbands, on hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, they immediately become perturbed. Their hair is loosened and their tight belts are slackened.
This means that the transcendental sound of the flute of Krishna extended to all corners of the universe. Also, it is significant that the gopis knew about the different kinds of airplanes flying in the sky. Another gopi said to her friends,
"My dear friends, the cows are also charmed as soon as they hear the transcendental flute of Krishna. It sounds to them like the pouring of nectar, and they immediately spread their long ears just to catch the liquid nectar of the flute. As for the calves, they are seen with the nipples of their mothers pressed in their mouths, but they cannot suck milk. They remain struck with devotion, and tears glide down their eyes, illustrating vividly how they are embracing Krishna from heart to heart."
These phenomena indicate that even the cows and calves in Vrindavan knew how to cry for Krishna and embrace him heart to heart. Actually, the perfection of Krishna consciousness can be culminated in the shedding of tears from the eyes. Then a gopi said,
"One cannot say that the bewilderment from Krishna's flute song is generated from the conjugal desire of ladies only, gopis and devis. Even dumb animals like the cows and their calves are affected by the nectar of Krishna's flute. In fear of spilling the nectar, the cows have raised their ears like cups to hear the sweet sound of Krishna's flute. The cause of the cow's bewilderment is not their vatsalya bhava, parental love towards Krishna, because their calves, which are devoid of vatsalya bhava, are also bewildered. The calves, having drunk their mother's milk, perk their ears to drink the nectar of Krishna's flute song as soon as they hear it. Then they stop sucking their mother's nipples. The milk falls from their open mouths and they stand as if stunned. The cows stand still as they take Govinda within their hearts through their tear-filled eyes and embrace him out of vatsalya bhava, motherly affection. In this way, all living entities have unalloyed pure love for Krishna and are fortunate because they can meet Krishna. Only we are unfortunate because of separation from him."
Then another young gopi said,
"My dear mother, the birds who are all looking at Krishna playing on his flute are sitting very attentively on the branches and twigs of different trees. From their features, it appears that they have forgotten everything and are engaged only in hearing Krishna's flute. This proves that they are not ordinary birds. They are great sages and devotees. And just to hear Krishna's flute, they have appeared in Vrindavan forest as birds."
Great sages and scholars are interested in Vedic knowledge, but the essence of Vedic knowledge is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Vedascha sabaya hameva vidya. Through the knowledge of the Vedas, Krishna has to be understood. From the behavior of these birds, it appeared that they were great scholars in Vedic knowledge and that they took to Krishna's transcendental vibration and rejected all the branches of Vedic knowledge. It seemed they preferred the branches of Vrindavan's trees.
Keisaki, abandoning their usual flighty nature, the birds of Vrindavan listen attentively to the sweet sound of Krishna's flute while relishing the beauty of his transcendental form. With their eyes closed in meditation on the music, they look just like sages steeped in bliss. Hey Saki, they have stopped flying, singing, and eating, becoming fully absorbed in tasting the pleasant sound of Krishna's flute. The birds have fluffed out their feathers due to ecstatic feelings of devotion.
Even the river Yamuna, being desirous of embracing the lotus feet of Krishna after hearing the transcendental vibration of his flute, broke her fierce waves to flow very nicely with lotus flowers in her hands, just to present flowers to Mukunda with deep feeling. The scorching heat of the autumn sunshine was sometimes intolerable, and therefore the clouds in the sky appeared in sympathy above Krishna and Balaram and their boyfriends while they were engaged in blowing their flutes. The clouds served as a soothing umbrella over their heads just to make friendship with Krishna. Observing that every living entity was nicely serving Krishna except herself, one very sad gopi said,
"Even the cloud, which is an unconscious entity, can show his affection by moving here and there to act as an umbrella shielding Krishna from the scorching rays of the sun. When Krishna plays his flute, the clouds remove the fatigue of the cowherd by pouring tiny streams of water from all directions, which seem like a shower of camphor dust. Just see, only we have been cheated from tasting the sweetness of serving Krishna, which is being relished by everyone in the universe."
The Aborigine girls became completely satisfied when they smeared their faces and breasts with the dust of Vrindavan, which was reddish from the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. The Aborigine girls had very full breasts, and they were also very lusty. But when their lovers touched their breasts, the girls were not very much satisfied. When they came out into the midst of the forest, they saw that while Krishna was walking, some of the leaves and creepers of the Vrindavan had turned reddish from the kumkum powder which fell from his lotus feet. His lotus feet are held by the gopis on their breasts, which are smeared with kumkum powder. But when Krishna travels in the Vrindavan forest with Balaram and his boyfriends, the reddish powder falls on the ground of the Vrindavan forest. So the lusty Aborigine girls, while looking toward Krishna playing his flute, saw the reddish kumkum on the ground and immediately took it and smeared it over their faces and breasts. In this way, they became fully satisfied, although they were not satisfied when their lovers touched their breasts. All material lusty desires can immediately be satisfied if one comes in contact with Krishna consciousness. Another gopi began to praise the unique position of Govardhan Hill in this way.
"How fortunate is this Govardhan Hill, for it is enjoying the association of Lord Krishna and Balaram, who are accustomed to walk on it. Thus, Govardhan is always in touch with the lotus feet of the Lord. And because Govardhan Hill is so obliged to Krishna and Balaram, it is supplying different types of fruit, roots, and herbs, as well as pleasing crystal water from its lakes in presentation to the Lord. The best presentation offered by Govardhan Hill, however, is newly grown grass for the cows and the calves. Govardhan Hill knows how to please the Lord by pleasing his most beloved associates, the cows and the cowherd boys.
The gopis continue to talk amongst themselves.
O Sakis, without taking shelter of a great devotee, our desires will never be fulfilled. We have heard from Gargi, daughter of Gargamuni, about the glories of Hari's devotees, and that Govardhan Hill is the best among them. Therefore, let's go there today, bathe in Manasaganga, and take darshan of Haridev, the presiding deity of that place. Certainly even our elders will not object to this. Moreover, Krishna is playing on the slope of Govardhan Hill.
Deciding upon this plan, the gopis glorify Govardhan Hill because it fulfills the desires of Krishna, his companions, and who hopefully fulfill their desire to meet Krishna as well. Then another gopi said,
everything appears wonderful when Krishna and Balaram travel in the forests of Vrindavan, playing their flutes and making intimate friendship with all kinds of moving and non-moving living creatures. When Krishna and Balaram play on their transcendental flutes, the moving creatures become stunned and stop their activities. And the non-moving living entities, like the trees and plants, begin to shiver with ecstasy. These are the wonderful reactions to the vibration of the transcendental flutes of Krishna and Balaram.
Overwhelmed in love for Krishna, they embraced each other and spoke as follows.
O Sakhi, the sound of Krishna's flute is a powerful yogi transforming the nature of reality with his mantra. It makes the conscious become unconscious, and it gives life to the lifeless. O Sakhi, look! All the aquatics, birds, and deer remain stunned like statues. The trees, earth, and mountains melt into liquid, and the hairs on their bodies stand erect.
Seeing the flute's ability to drastically alter the state of other moving and non-moving entities, the gopis worried about upholding their vows, and they said,
can any young woman possibly stop the low sound of that resonating flute, which the enemy of Kaliya started playing upon attaining youth? It is so terrible that it brings about a state of death, like that induced by drinking poison. Rather than stopping it, we simply become playthings in the hands of that flute. That flute's sound is the blemish of our family. But if we cannot hear it, we die in the pain of separation. Agonized by this painful separation, we absorb our minds in remembering the Prince of Vrindavan, the Lord of our hearts. His fickle mind is always agitated by lust. So every day, he proudly displays the attracting power of his flute song and enjoys a festival beneath the trees of Vrindavan. But still, the residents of Vrindavan offer him the greatest respect. With the sweetness of his bodily effulgence, he pleases all living entities and satisfies the world.
Krishna and Balaram carried binding ropes on their shoulders and in their hands, just like ordinary cowherd boys. While milking the cows, the boys bound their hind legs with small ropes. This rope almost always hung from the shoulders of the boys, and it was not absent from the shoulders of Krishna and Balaram. In spite of them being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they played exactly like cowherd boys, and therefore everything became wonderful and attractive, especially to the gopis, who said,
"When will we smell Krishna's sweet lotus face, framed by the thick glossy locks of his dark hair? His eyebrows dance on his broad forehead, and his nose is beautifully raised. When an object falls into an ocean of sweetness, it also manifests sweetness. Similarly, the yellow robe draped attractively on his turban, which Murari uses for tying the cows, has become joyful by contacting his blissful form."
While Krishna was engaged in tending the cows in the forest of Vrindavan or on Govardhan Hill, the gopis in the village were always absorbed in thinking of him and discussing his different pastimes. This is a perfect example of Krishna consciousness, to somehow or other remain always engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. The vivid example is always present in the behavior of the gopis. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya declared that no one can worship the Supreme Lord by any method which is better than the method of the gopis. The gopis were not born in very high Brahman or Kshatriya families. They were born in the family of Vaishyas, and not in big mercantile communities, but in the families of cowherd men. They were not very well educated, although they heard all sorts of knowledge from the Brahmins, the authorities of Vedic knowledge. The gopis' only purpose was to remain always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So we've come to the end of the first stage of our internal journey into the very magical and mystical land of Braj. It's a very interesting way to travel. You may find, you obviously have, no discomfort, no expenses, no jet lag. Very wonderful way to travel. So please join us again soon. We very much look forward to seeing you. Hare Krishna.